I think we've started recording. We should start the podcast.
Hey, you know what I'm excited about?
Starting the podcast.
Besides that, I've got big news.
Well, let's have it.
My baseball season starts tomorrow night.
That's big news.
One, that's one. And it's going to be 85 degrees here tomorrow.
Well, I don't think it's going to be 85 degrees here. Remember,
well,
we're in
no,
a different zone.
Right, you're on the South Coast, so.
But I have to say that today it was borderline wonderful. You know, it was probably high 60s, you know, and just delightful.
Yep. Well, folks, welcome to the May Mike and Scotty Live show. I am, in fact, Scotty. I am not Craig Biscayer, but, you know, Mike, I
They have
I
the same barber.
Exactly. And he's not getting rich off of either of us. I'll tell you that right now. I listened to that podcast shortly after you posted it, and I thought it was really, really well done. Craig brought a lot of energy and information to the show, and I hope he's listening because I want to thank him personally for filling in for me. It was a fairly hectic and unusual time in my life, and it started with a traffic accident that thankfully no one was hurt
right.
in, but an 87-year-old woman decided coming in the opposite direction decided to take a left-hand turn in front of me.
You just—it's a cliche, but you might think you know how your day is going to go, but really you don't.
Well, you know, what I was thinking about immediately afterwards was were all the things that I was doing before that happened, like within a few minutes, talking to people on the phone, of course using hands-free calling, you know, listening to music, all that sort of thing, and I was headed down to a baseball practice, and you know. In a blink of an eye, my car was totaled, and I'm sure her car was totaled too. She was very lucky there was no passenger in her car.
I've had that experience. You might remember when somebody
Yes.
took the front of my Mercedes off.
Yeah.
I remember getting out and looking at it in disbelief because, like you say, just a few moments before that, it was a whole car.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When at that moment it had nothing in front of the front wheels.
Oh, man.
And you look at that and you think to yourself, how is this even possible?
Yeah, it's like someone took a guillotine to the nose of it.
Obviously it's designed to shear off, but you know, it's just not a good thing to witness.
No, it isn't. And you know, after I realized that I was unhurt and that the woman was unhurt, my next thought was, you know, I had 3 months left to pay on this thing, and then I was going to have no car payments for a while.
It's always the way.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yep.
So then, you know, severe depression set in, and I knew it was totaled, and the insurance agent confirmed it the day before you guys recorded the last podcast, which threw me into a complete panic because – the rental car coverage I had on my insurance policy at that point was only going to cover me for 7 days instead of the 30 if it were a situation where the car were being repaired.
Mm-hmm.
So I literally had to find a car almost immediately because my job depends on it. I drive as part of my job all day, every day.
And we know how easy it is and how much fun it is to shop for and buy a car.
I'd rather have a full frontal lobotomy. In fact,
it's miserable.
When I had my full frontal lobotomy, I enjoyed it much more than I have never liked buying a car. And I'm in sales. I've been in sales for decades. And you would think that I would know how to deal with these people. And I walk out of there feeling like a blithering idiot, like I've just been completely, you know, like I need to do a hashtag me too.
It's hard to believe, though, that in 2018, that's what passes for the car buying process that everybody says, oh, okay, to. You know what I mean? I can't believe it.
Well, and again, I don't know if, you know, it was an honest mistake or if, you know, this is just the way that this place does business, but this finance manager had to tear up the contract three times because I found mistakes every time he did
Well, the words honest mistake and finance manager don't generally go in the same
it.
sentence, you know.
Yeah, no, I know. I
But
know.
didn't you find that the sound, that horrible metal on metal sound of another car and your car meeting is something that, you know, you never forget once it happens?
Well, and it's a boom, right? But I was lucky because, I
It's a
hit.
boom with a crunch and, you know,
Yeah.
this terrible tearing, rending sound. It's like a battleship, you know, going down.
Yep. Yep. I was lucky that, I had the engine between me and a passenger door. Not another engine. I mean, if that had been a head-on collision, that would have been something the insurance adjuster said. I can't believe the airbags didn't go off. He said, you were going fast enough that they should have, and he said you may want to call the manufacturer and have them start an investigation. And my response was, well, one, you've already totaled the car, so I'm not inclined to do that. And two, no one was hurt, so if I'm not hurt and the airbags didn't go off, that's a win.
They didn't go off for my accident either.
Jeez. Well, he said, some are particularly touchy, and some
You mean
aren't.
those Takatas?
Yeah, exactly. I guess at the end of the day, like I said, I wasn't hurt. The worst thing that happened was I had to go buy a new car. So, which I'm very happy with, and my girlfriend actually gets the credit for finding it, and it was the deal of the century on top of everything else. So,
Just think of it as an unplanned upgrade.
yeah, exactly. In between that, as usual, you and I have been really, really busy. We're
Yeah, I thought
both.
I was busy before, but now I'm beginning to understand actual busy.
Yeah, we've both attended operating sessions, albeit different operating sessions, and we're going to talk about that. And in fact, and of course, you've got your addition project that's going on, and we're going to update folks on that. But why don't we start off with the op session that you went to up in upstate New York? That was kind of far afield for you, by the way.
Well, you know, there are people that come to my op sessions and to Mike Confalone's op sessions from New York. So when they have an op session, it's hard to say no.
Right.
And this was my buddy Ken Karlowitz, who has I don't know if you saw the pictures. I posted a couple of pictures from it on the podcast group. He has a just a stunningly beautiful layout. And what's extraordinary about it is how quickly he's gotten it to where it is. He chose to have a friend of his help him basically construct all of the infrastructure, and they were up and running with the complete layout, you know, all the bench work, all the wiring, all the track, in under a year. And it allowed him to jump on scenery, but the really amazing thing about it is when you look at the pictures, I saw it a year ago. In other words, I saw it running. I ran it when Karen and I visited him and his wife for the first time, just about this time last year, I think it was. And there was basically no scenery, or almost no scenery. So to see what he has done in the past year, you know, people accuse me of working at a furious pace. This, I think, was really an eye-opener, you know, because Confalone works fast. I've learned to work fast. What Ken has accomplished, you know, I walked in there and I thought, wait a minute, how is this even possible? And we're not talking about, you know, just getting it presentable like I like to do. We're talking about fully detailed, extremely well done scenes, complete with the right kind of photo backdrop that gives it depth, you know, amazing attention to detail without being over detailed. In other words, everything looked just right, like how it ought to look, to the point where Conforlone and I were standing there looking at some of these scenes, and he said, "Jesus, I gotta get start doing to some things to this level, because wow, when you see it done like that, it's thought provoking." I actually came home from that op session. Of course, I had a great time. Him and his wife were great hosts, and everybody had a lot of fun. And his house is beautiful, his layout's beautiful, and to my surprise, when I had gone to it before, we had gone to my stepdaughter's and stayed there for a while, and then hopped in the car and went over the GW Bridge and up the Palisades Parkway and went to his place. So I didn't really have like a sense of how long it was going to take to get to his place, but it was like 3 hours and 20 minutes, which is
What?
not that bad.
No.
I mean, it probably takes you almost that to drive to Dick's house, right?
Well, it's 2.5 hours to get to Adams, so yeah, it's not.
Right. And here I am, I'm leaving New England. I'm crossing the big moat there, and so, you'd think it would take a lot longer than that. So it really wasn't that bad a trip. And when you do an out and back in one day, it's a lot of driving, but you have a decent car, you take it easy if you don't get screwed on the road, with traffic, it's not that bad. So
It's pleasant.
yeah, so it was a very pleasant day, but it was so thought-provoking that I actually had difficulty falling asleep that night, because I was trying to, I was like almost overstimulated. You know what I mean? It was just, there's so many things. I took over 50 photos of his layout, and it's not a huge layout, but it's not a miniature layout either. But the point is, there were so many. You'd walk around his layout and you would see a scene that just begged to be photographed. And then you might approach it from a different angle and have a whole different viewpoint of it and want to take that shot. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I was walking around trying to take 50 photos. It was just every time I turned around, there was something very interesting to take a photo of, or something that I wanted to refer back to. He had done a great job in his choice of scenic materials. And he's using, I thought I was pretty well up on some of the stuff that's out there, but actually, there's a lot of stuff coming out of Germany that's amazing. Really,
Mike,
really good stuff.
can you let our listeners know what it is, what prototype Carl Ken models?
He is a D&H in the very late 70s.
Okay.
And he's got a really nice roster. He probably has probably around 20 locomotives that are beautifully done, and I did all the sound in them, so obviously they sound good. And he's got just, he's got a nice roster of well done and well weathered freight cars. I'm telling you, everything looked right. The way it ought to be. I think if you saw it, I know you've seen a slew of layouts, but I think it would surprise you, because I've seen a slew of layouts too. And I thought I knew what I was in for when I walked in there, but I didn't. It really took me by surprise. I mean, I had him send me a list of some of the stuff that he's using. A lot of Silfloor products that I have used a few of them here and there, but they've got some really good ground cover things that that are a step beyond static grass and super tree bushes. You know what I mean? And it allowed him to get this variety of textures without looking overdone at all. It just looked like it should look. And when I saw that, I thought, yeah, I gotta be here with this too. So I was just so like overstimulated from all of that and the thought process that it produced, that I actually had trouble falling asleep that night, despite having a long day. So it kind of shows you how much impact it had on me.
So a couple of things, Mike. I want you to describe the operating session and some of the trains that were running around the layout. But before you do that, I just kind of wanted to point out, because I've had a lot of experience in using a lot of these German products, and some of the layouts that I've built for people over the years, and I know that it's in a scenery is one of those things that is evolving in terms of the breadth of product,
Right.
and we have the Europeans to thank for that, and I think that has to do with the fact that their layouts are smaller and they're very much into detail.
Yeah, they're quite different in terms of the way they operate. I've had some conversations with Matt Herman about this. Europeans almost never do MU of locomotives. They're usually running one locomotive. They've got a very, very different way of approaching it. So one of the things that Matt had to do with Lokesound was try to get them up to speed on how us North Americans do things, because there were things that he was asking them to do that they said, well, we're not going to do that. That would never sell. And he'd have to explain the business case for it based on his experience and knowledge of the market, So I understand what you're saying on that, and it does make sense. But there's detailing for the sake of detailing, and there's in some cases over detailing. I mean, I think we've seen examples of that. I think what really caught my eye was the convincing variety of textures, because when you look at not so much trees, but brush and weeds, and some ground covery kind of things, with some little flowers on them, little purple flowers and orange flowers and white flowers. Not overdone, but it's not just a green palette. It had color texture to it, and very tastefully done, because it would be easy to overdo that. It was very, very tastefully done. Plus, he did a lot of his own. Like, I was struck by the variety of his weeds, and it wasn't just stuff that he bought. He makes a lot of weeds out of, brush material and wire brushes and just all kinds of stuff. He had the variety that he employed was stunning and very impressive.
Well, you brought up a good point, and that's that there's a fine line between what looks good and realistic and what's overdone. And I know, a few very famous modelers who, everything they touch with scenery is just too much. They go about, three steps too far, in my opinion.
Well, I think Ken has the benefit of having a natural artist's eye. He's one of these guys who was a tremendous photographer, and you can't be a great photographer again without having that eye for it. So everything he does, all of his modeling and just all of his efforts in the model railroading world are approached from that artistic point of view. He just kind of knows how things are supposed to look, and that's what he does with his modeling. So, it sounds fairly simplistic, but I don't know if you can teach that. You know what I mean? Like, to get it so right, it's clear to me that he's just got it, and you can learn from that. You know what I mean? Like, you can be inspired by it, and you can emulate it to a degree. For me, it was eye-opening. It made me think of things that I hadn't really been thinking about. So it's important to me just from that aspect. You know what I mean? But he's originating this. You know what I mean? So that's the real creativity to it. He thought of it and saw it and did it that way. So that, I think, was what really impressed me. It was original,
Ryan,
it was that's I guess what I'm getting at.
for decades we had a palette of greens, right? And Brian Nolan, late Brian Nolan, was one of the first modelers that I ever saw that introduced some flowering bushes and with some reds and purples and things like that. And it knocked me out the first time I saw it because it was like, dawn rising over Marblehead.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. I mean, it's
I was like,
how
wow.
summer looks.
Right. Now, I also believe, and I don't know that I would classify myself as an artist, but I think to a degree what we do has a has an artistic component to it.
Sure.
I believe that in a train room the colors should be somewhat muted because, really bright colors tend to be over-exaggerated.
That's why fall is such a difficult season to model convincingly.
Yep.
I've seen it done well, and I've seen it done not so well, and
Yep.
it looks, difficult.
And
I
it's a
should.
really fine line between the two, by the way.
Right, I would be remiss if I didn't also point out that one of the things that he did, which wasn't immediately apparent to me, but again, in talking with my friend Mr. Confalone after the fact, he was talking about how the way that he lit the layout created photographic drama in each scene. So he had a lot of clip-on lights with LED spots and floods that he had positioned behind his upper valance, and it was clear that he had spent some time and effort in getting all of the right lighting angles to make each scene look just right. And that was a big part of it, because it enabled him, I think, to show his scenes with the right kind of shadow emphasis where it should be, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I agree completely. And again, I think that that's something that is very difficult to be good at.
And the bigger your layout, the more effort you have to put into that, because I like here, I know I've it's kind of like my white whale is to get all of that right. And when all of your light comes from overhead ceiling lights in a grid where you can't always put them exactly where you want them to be, it leaves something to be desired. So it's something that, as time goes on, I plan to address somehow.
Yep.
And in the new section, I may do something completely different with my lighting and actually not put much or not rely too much on, troffer kind of lights, but I might do some more surface mounted things because it was obvious that when you do it right, it makes a huge difference.
Well, the other thing that I appreciate when we have these conversations about operating sessions is how much you learn from them.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost a cliche, and yet it's true. If you even when you go to a bad layout, you learn from that. You might learn what not to do,
And I would say that unfortunately I've been to more bad layouts than good layouts. It's just everyone's abilities are at different levels.
I don't think I've ever been to a layout that didn't have some merit to it,
Oh, I can honestly say I've never gone to a layout where I haven't learned something.
Right.
So that in and of itself is worthwhile.
Yep.
And I also attended an operating session the same weekend. I was up at Dick Elwell's house. And interesting enough that we were talking about fall foliage, as Dick is one of the few people I know that has successfully modeled a New England fall. And his artistic ability is off the charts when it comes to his ability to see the right colors, the right balances of
Yeah, the
colors.
right proportions, exactly.
How to light them, the colors of rocks.
I was only at his place that one time we went out there, so I don't really remember what he's using for his lighting sources.
And I would have to, because it, like everything else, it's evolved. I don't think that he's gotten to LEDs at this point. They're probably a mixture of fluorescence and maybe still some incandescence.
Does he have a valance
He
and
does.
directional lighting behind it?
He does, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's very very realistic lighting. It to me it feels like that part of New England.
It looks right.
And so for me, first of all, I hadn't been up there in a while, so it was important that I get up there, especially before the baseball season starts, because you can't count on anything once the games begin. So, and he's been having operating sessions about once a month, and he was a little annoyed with himself after the last operating session, not the one that I attended, but the one before, because he had a switch machine that failed during the session. And if you think about it, if that's the worst thing that happens in an entire operating session, and it's the only thing that happens in an entire operating session,
Yeah, that happens on the prototype too.
that's a good day. But this particular switch machine, and I think I'd mentioned this on previous podcasts, he's been replacing all of his old Hank's Craft switch machines with Tortoise switch machines. He's got hundreds of turnouts on this layout. So, the process for, an 82-year-old is, to crawl into the layout and get access to some of these places that he hasn't accessed in decades is a little daunting. But also, the Hank's Craft switch machine it dimensionally is totally different than a Tortoise switch machine.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with the other, so it's like starting over, but it's very difficult to do that with an in-place turnout.
Right. So a lot of it hasn't been a simple process of just taking out one and putting in another.
He's not having a lot of fun doing it.
I don't, he never complains about anything. So,
Right.
I don't think he loves it, but I think it's keeping him busy, and I think, he realizes that it's going to put him, position him to, continue to operate that layout flawlessly for, several years.
Right.
And those Tortoise switch machines are tried and true and fairly bulletproof.
And he's
So,
been using those Hank's Craft for forever, right? It's not like they were bad switch machines.
well, he replaced, old solenoid switch machines back in the probably the early 80s with the Hank's Craft.
Right.
And
So he got like over 30 years out of
yeah, exactly. And
him.
they were operating fine. I think he felt like, he wanted to do it before it became, too difficult to get under the layout.
Sure. I
So,
have to say, from a the opposite viewpoint, one of the best things I ever did was get rid of all of mine,
yeah.
and have all manual turnouts. I have not missed it.
Well, and so in the case of his layout, everything new that he's done has been closer to the edge of the layout, and he's gone manual with a lot of those
Okay.
turnouts. But there were just so many of them that were far enough back, or part of ladders and so on and so forth, that you had to bite the bullet.
Right.
And I will say that.
I was only able to do it because of, layout kaboom, so.
Yep. The job that I was assigned, which is the paper mill switcher, is all, with the exception of one turnout, they're all manual throws. And
Don't you do that job every time you go there?
well, I did it once before, and I wanted to. I'll tell you why I like it. I like it for two reasons. One, because it's switching, and I just like to switch cars.
Sure.
There is a strategy to it. I felt like the first time that I did it, I spent a lot of time scratching my head, and I wanted to see if I, could figure it out a little easier the second time around. Now, it was a full year since I'd done it last, so I didn't remember it. It wasn't like, I remembered every thing that I could have done better from
Is
the
there
previous op.
variation to the job from session to session?
Yeah, and there's a little variation as well. So, and then the other thing too is that I'm not reliant upon anybody else to do that job. So I can do it at my own pace. I'm not waiting for Yardmaster. I'm not waiting for dispatcher to give me right away to anywhere. I'm in my own little world down there. So I found that this time around, I did it in about half the time that it took me the first go around. It was very enjoyable, but
What
the
do you
takeaway.
attribute that to? Was it just a better mindset maybe for you this time?
Yeah, I don't think I was quite as intimidated by it. It wasn't new, but like I said, I didn't necessarily remember what I did the last time.
No,
So
but I mean, yeah, sometimes I don't know if you, for me, it just depends what kind of mindset I'm in at a particular time. So, some days you're sharper than others. Some days you're better at one type of thing than another. It might be as simple as that.
yep. Yep. And then the takeaway for me was just how consistently good that layout runs. And we talked about this before, but I think that has a lot to do with not only the cleanliness of the layout and the fact that he stays on top of maintenance issues, things that you never see because you only
Sure.
show up for operating sessions. But
So it's not like he never maintains it.
oh
He's on it.
no. Oh yeah. But more importantly, the fact that it operates on a regular basis. Trains are running on those tracks, at least once a month for an operating session, and then, who knows what he's doing between times.
It is a fact, and we've spoken about this before, that the more you run a layout, the better it runs. And I'm not 100% sure why that is. I
Well, I
don't know if
do.
it's because when you run it a lot, you're able to keep up with all the little things that
Yep.
maybe you tweak. And it also seems like it stays cleaner. Maybe it's because when you're running it a lot, you're not making a mess.
Well, exactly. You're keeping up with the maintenance. So, if you're running it on a regular basis and you've got a point problem on a turnout, you're going to fix it before the operating session. If you don't run on a regular basis, you may not find that problem until the operating session.
Exactly. That's no time to find a problem.
Right. So he had a fairly new group of operators. And a lot of them were new to his layout, but some of them were just new to operation. And usually that means that the digger's running around helping people. But when we caught up after the operating session, a couple of days later, I called him and he said, "No," he said, "they did a really good job." He said, "We got almost all of the trains out, which seldom happens. I
Really?
think I've seen it once that everything got out." But he was pleased, and he said he had no issues in terms of the layout. So he was pretty, to him that's the big thing. He wants to make sure that everyone has a good time.
It's interesting that he has this like no shortage of people that come in and operate on his layout. We our little incestuous group doesn't have a lot of new people coming in. We tend to find that our experienced crew. I mean, there's some obviously there's some change in the crew from session to session, but
Yep.
it's probably a group of 10 or 11 people that you choose 5 or 6 out of at any given time, right? So
Well,
not a lot of variation there, but Dix is probably a vastly different pool of people.
it is, and this group came from Syracuse. And I think so to me, here's the difference. People will call it now. Dick knows everybody in the hobby, and everybody knows Dick.
Right.
So someone will call him up and say, "Hey, I got a group of guys from East Chippeepi that want to drive 14 hours and operate on your layout." And Dick will say, "Well, great, I'm going to be home this day, this weekend, and when do they want to come?" And it gets set up. If someone called you and said the same thing, I think you would, and justifiably so, would be a little more reluctant to do that for two reasons. One, because you don't know these people, and we're children of the late 50s and early 60s, so we're cynical by nature, for one thing, and two, because there's a comfort level with people who are running on your layout on a regular basis.
Well, they're coming into your home. I mean, do you want a bunch of strangers parading through your home? Are you running an amusement park? I mean, that may sound terrible, but
No,
I like to have friends over,
but it's very true. And
Which
if you
isn't to say that you don't sometimes make new friends by somebody coming over, usually a friend of a friend. So, you figure they're fine, but it's. And maybe I'll mellow with time, Scott. Don't you think that's possible?
so anyway, no, I don't think you're not mellow. I think you're cautious. I think you're comfortable with the people that you know. And I'm the same way.
Sure.
I would be, I'll tell you, one of the worst days of my life, and I didn't think it would be an issue. One of the worst days of my life was when the NMRA buses pulled up to my house.
I've heard about this. It's something that'll never happen here.
Right, exactly. And I thought, okay, well, at the time I was recording DVDs at a
Right.
fast and furious pace. I
You
was
were a pro.
manufacturing. Yeah, so I needed that PR. I needed people to see what I was doing. And I was involved in a large undertaking in my basement.
Right.
It's not easy to be an undertaker in your basement, by
Isn't that against code?
and but people in the run-up to that open house, people were telling me, make sure you've got a number of people whom you can trust to act as roving security, because so and so had a caboose, brass caboose, stolen off their layout, and so and so had some equipment damaged. And I thought, oh boy.
Yeah, you think about how much you slave over all of that stuff, how much time and effort goes into it. So that emotion of needing to watch out for things happening that I don't want to have happen, that's exactly everything I want to avoid. You know what I mean? So everybody that comes here, I trust completely. I trust them to handle things properly. I'm not looking for more anxiety. You know what I mean? I want it to be fun. I want it to be relaxing. So you need to trust who's here and feel that they're, compatible modelers and compatible approach. And if that's a high bar or a bar that some people don't like, so be it. But that's the bar.
No, it's, I mean, to me, it's the only way I could do it. But God bless Dick for having that fortitude.
He's obviously a people person,
Oh yeah,
capital
he is.
PP.
And it's fun to watch these folks come in, especially people that haven't seen the layout before. There's certainly a sense of awe. There's a sense of reverence towards Dick. Probably rightly so. But anyway, we had a great time, and I was certainly glad that I got up there. You, on the other hand, Mr. Rose, are not going to be having an operating session anytime soon.
Well, there's some controversy about that.
Well, let's start with the status of the construction, and then we'll kind of figure out what's viable after that.
Yeah, well, the project, since the last podcast, the project has begun in earnest. And that means that, the guys are out there at 7:30 making noise, and my schedule has changed radically.
Nice. Nice.
Now, I mean, that doesn't mean, I mean, any change away from my normal schedule, you can tug it in one direction, but it's not going to stick. In other words, it's not like, well, this is my new schedule and I've adopted it. It's just a matter of time before the forces of nature and the tides drag me back to my natural rhythms. You can't fight it. But in the short term, yeah, I'm going to bed somewhat on the earlier side, and man, I am falling asleep in about 10 seconds. A lot of the stuff that I have to do on the IT front is still after hours thing. So, there's no question that I'm at times burning the candle at both ends, and it's going to get worse. What's happened so far? If you saw my driveway right now, you'd say, "Well, I can tell what's going to be happening here any minute." Everything's all marked out on the driveway. DigSafe has come and marked all of the utilities coming in. And just on Monday, I met with the excavator who's coming in a couple of weeks. The driveway guy is supposed to be coming at the end of this week or maybe the beginning of next week to make a cut and strip everything below that all the way down to the retaining wall and back. So it's going to be a big dirt area and or mud pit if it rains a lot. So I'm nervous about that, but it is what it is. You got to do it. And I feel good about the guy doing the excavation. He's done some work here for me before. He's very skilled with his mini excavator, and he was my preferred guy just based on a comfort level, because it's not your typical excavation. It's not like a house lot where you're digging a big hole. These are precision, non-straight trenches being dug between things. It's not going to be simple, and it's the part of the project that was causing me to lose some sleep, in the planning stages. Once the hole is dug and the foundation gets in, this project's going to fly because it's been well planned and I've got a good building crew, to go there. But a lot of stuff had to be done before then, So for example, the two doors to the left of the entry doors going into the basement,
Sure do.
the oil tank room, well, that only has one oil tank in it now, and has a new, it's been kind of like bumped up. It's the future train pantry, as I've spoken about it before. And there's a shed above that now that didn't even exist. It was just acres of unused deck upstairs. So that's quite different. So that's been constructed. And the stairway to get up to my office is now the new stairway that it's going to be, and the old stairway just yesterday was removed. And of course that stairway intruded into the driveway area that's going to be excavated. So that was one of those prerequisites. It's kind of like the big dig, in Boston. There were these utilities and other things that needed to be moved and relocated in order to permit the construction that you need to do.
Well, I've got two wishes for you. One, it doesn't take as long, nor does it cost as much money as the big dig. I'm sure there'd probably be as much corruption, but nothing you can do about that, right?
Yeah, well, I am actually I feel good about the people involved in the project, and of course part of the problem is that with the weather that we've had this spring, everybody that's good is behind, anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks behind. So you have to adjust your own timeline and expectations, and realize that, and remember rather, that anybody that's good is not just sitting around waiting for your call, right? So it's just tricky to get the excavator and the foundation guy and the driveway guy all coordinated, So it just, it just is what it is. All projects, as you know, have to sort of be driven to completion. And project management is an art. If you're just an ass about it, people aren't going to want to work for you. And so it's a mixture of begging, pleading, cajoling, and every other adjective you can think of in order to get everybody to do what you want them to do when you want them to do it. So I am fully engaged in that process at this point. I'm on the phone all the time, talking to different subs, trying to make arrangements, and in the midst of all of that, doing all of the little things in the project that only I could and should do. So,
Sure.
and in addition, locomotives keep arriving for Dartmouth Locomotive Works to do installs on, and IT projects still need running, so I am not bored.
I went through this the same thing when I built the addition on my house, and I did all of the project management, and it's a never-ending process of really conducting an orchestra.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. You've got to see this thing through, and you've got to be on top of it, So not only is it all the arrangements, but you've also got to be, talking to the guys on a daily basis, understanding what the next steps are, talking it through with them, making sure that, there's not something that nobody had thought about that's all of a sudden a huge priority. So what I'm trying not to do is be too fully scheduled if possible. In other words, consciously building in chunks of empty time, supposedly empty time in my weekly schedule so that I can react to these things, so that I have some slack to deal with things, And in doing that deliberately, I can honestly say that at the end of a week, I've had zero free time. Like none.
It's amazing. I owned and ran a business during that process, and you're adding hours to both ends of your day,
Right.
so that there's time in the middle to make sure that the framers are showing up when they're supposed to, making sure that the excavator is digging the hole deep enough, so that the floor from the new basement lines up with the floor of the old basement. And by the way, they're 3 inches off. Great.
We've spent a considerable amount of time and effort with my contractor with the transit, and we're trying to maintain that level of the existing basement throughout the new addition, and that means part of the former driveway needs to come up, part of it needs to go down, and you really are trying to picture and think about all of this in 3D. So you can't have, I don't think, too many conversations about all of that so that everybody's on the same page.
No, you can't. And I'll warn you in advance, when you think they're on the same page, they might not be.
You've got to, you've got to stay on top of it. Like it's not like the excavator is going to come and I won't be here that day 100% of the time.
Right, right, right.
It's something that, there's going to be things you run into that are going to need some decision making. So
Yeah. Without question.
and
Things.
I'm fully prepared to jump into the ditch with a shovel to dig around the electrical conduits if that's what it takes,
Yep. Yep. Now, I was a little surprised because it sounds like perhaps you are considering another operating session.
Oh, right. That's how we started all of this. Well, it's not, so it's kind of like this. I mean, if I left it up to the ops crew, I'd be operating, every 4 weeks.
Of course.
But I warned everybody at the last op session that that was potentially the last op session until whenever, And then, of course, Confalone, he's not averse to leaning on me a little bit about that because, he enjoys it and he doesn't want to be the only guy holding op sessions, and I certainly get that.
Yep.
And it just caused me to actually think about, what the issues are and what the obstacles are to having another op session. The bottom line is I honestly don't know what I don't know. So until I tear the layout down, and when I say that, I mean the part that's moving into the new building.
Yeah, thank you for qualifying
There,
that.
yeah,
Thank
in
you. Our
theory,
listeners would have had a
yeah,
major
right. No,
problem
I
catching
said
that.
no more layout kabooms, and I meant it. But until I sever the main line and move that out into the new building to begin construction, in theory, There's no obstacle to having another op session. I might have to bring people in through the house as opposed to through the mud pit. So there's, there's that aspect of it, which is fine. The overarching consideration would be more one of, do I have the brain cycles to plan and orchestrate another op session when I'm fully engaged here? You know what I mean? So it's entirely possible that once I get the foundation in place and the carpenters get going out there, there may be a thought gap, that enables me to think about something else. And it might be nice to have another op session before I do sever the main line and commit to an unknown amount of time before I have another one, right? So I'm not going to rule it out, but I'm not going to make any promises either. I think I'm leaning towards having one more op session at some undetermined point before I sever the main line.
Well, I think regardless of whether you do, and I certainly understand what you're up against, you're a jerk. So I just want to point that out.
For trying to have one, you mean?
No, just in general.
Oh, okay.
Just in general. I think it's important that from time to time in our lives, there are people around us that make sure our feet are on the ground.
Right.
And I just wanted to play that role with you this evening. So
I
it's.
try to do that with you as much as possible.
But you do it non-verbally. I usually just get this look from you, like that's my you're a jerk look.
Well, it's hard to give somebody the stink eye on an audio podcast, though,
I
so.
know. I get it. I understand. I understand. We would be remiss, and it would be poor form on our part if we did not point out that our good friend Dave Owens and his crew will be putting on the what number is this? New England Prototype Modelers meet.
Maybe 14, something like that.
Oh, I think it's more than that. I think
Maybe
it was like,
15.
yeah, I think it's at least 15, and it might even be 16. So I'm gonna go with we'll split the baby in half. We'll say the 15th annual New England Prototype Modelers meet.
Our research department did not do the proper due diligence
We
before the show
did. They
tonight.
did. They didn't. And they will be punished accordingly when the opportunity presents itself. But
That's the problem with interns.
yeah, it is. And the pay stinks, and so
Right.
does their attitude. So anyway, it's the first weekend. Always the first weekend in June, and this year it happens to be the 1st and 2nd of June, which is Friday and Saturday. And it's in Enfield, Connecticut. And please look it up online. When the Prototype Modelers meet, it's one of the older and certainly wonderfully run Prototype Modelers meets in the country.
Yep, definitely one of the great meets, and I missed it last year for because of layout kaboom, believe it or not. And
Well,
this year, I spoke with Dave, down in Malvern, and I was trying to get a sense of how much difficulty it would cause him if I said I wanted to go and then had to cancel. And he said, "Don't worry about it at all." He said, "Things happen, and I'd rather have you try to make it and not than to just dismiss it out of hand." So I've committed to going. I've committed to doing a clinic, and I'm probably just going to materialize on the Saturday. I just don't think I can, commit to both days with everything that's going on,
that's
particularly
understandable.
where, I need to be here on the ground on a construction day, but Saturday is not a construction day, so really there shouldn't be any obstacle to that other than my ongoing state of total exhaustion.
Of course. And unfortunately, I will be absent this year because I will be on a plane flying to London that day. And
Not something you do every day.
no, and we're actually we're going on one of these Band of Brothers tours, and we'll be in London, and then sailing across the English Channel to Normandy, and touring the various towns and beaches associated with
Are you going to
the
land on the
Normandy.
beach?
Well, you don't exactly land on the beach, but you do sail from Portsmouth, England, to the Normandy coast,
Wow.
and dock there. I don't believe we'll have to, get on a landing craft, a Higgins boat, and
How cool would that be, though?
well,
Do you
I
get seasick?
substantially, no, I don't.
Okay.
Substantially cooler when nobody is shooting at you.
Exactly.
So we're my girlfriend and I and her sister and her boyfriend and my girlfriend's dad and his girlfriend are all going to celebrate his 70th birthday. He's a retired army colonel, so this was a bucket list item for him, and quite honestly, a bucket list item for me as well.
Oh yeah. Now,
I
will
mean,
you
this
get
is
to come back on the via the channel?
No, we actually this particular tour, now they're all different to a degree. Some are longer than others. Some end up in Berchtesgadens. This one ends up in Paris the following Saturday, and we fly home, or actually the following Friday, and we fly home from Paris the
Oh.
next day. So
So you get
it's
one night in Paris.
Yeah, we get about 12 hours in Paris, and it's funny to think that, you're going to France and you're only going to spend a half a day in Paris, but the tour is a military history tour, and that's where the focus is. And if there were an airport in on the Normandy coast, we'd be flying out of there,
I see.
and we wouldn't even get to Paris. So
How far is the coast from Paris? I'm not really sure.
Paris is substantially inland. I don't know how many miles, but I would say it's got to be 100 miles
Oh, wow.
close to it. And I could be off, but I know it's kind of in the center of France. So I really, really looking forward to that. And although I'm going to be tired, the following week when I get back, we will record a podcast, and I'll have some stories to tell. And I actually just bought a second flash card for my camera.
Have you, I know you've been to the Azores, but have you been to the to mainland Europe before?
Yeah, I've been to England. I've been to London and Liverpool and Manchester, England.
Okay.
And I've been to Italy.
So you already know what that East is a beast, West is best thing is all about.
Yeah, and I so I don't sleep on a plane either. So,
Right.
I never have, I don't
Me
see
either.
a time that I ever will, but although this time is likely to be different, for the simple reason that we're actually bit the bullet and bought first class tickets. These seats actually lay down completely and become beds. So, and as my girlfriend said, it's money well spent, because literally when that plane lands at 8 a.m. in London on June 2nd, we've got all of that day to see whatever we want on our own in London before the tour starts that evening. And then, that's it. So she's got, 10 things picked out that, we've got to get to, and things, some of them I've seen and just want to see again.
Sure.
Westminster Abbey is unbelievable. Tower of London, they're just
Oh,
so.
London's a great city. If you can't enjoy walking around London and just absorbing the architecture and the history, I mean, I was there just once for a week and I could have stayed for a month.
London is so geared for tourism. Just from an historical perspective. And I'm not a city person, but of all the places I've been, and I've been to, Rome and London and most of the largest US cities, London is by far my favorite.
Interesting.
It's just a cool place. So
Well, before
looking
we go, I
forward.
should probably ask you how we're doing with my building.
Well, given everything, the honest answer is I since we last talked, I haven't had a chance to even address it, and I sincerely apologize for that because my motives were a lot more pure when we started this project, and some of the
You know,
things,
we've seriously missed our window, right?
yeah, well, no, I mean.
And what that means is it just doesn't matter at this point.
Well, and I sense that, but it matters to me, and I'm sure I'll have a spot here and there. Some of the rougher waters have subsided, but certainly,
Baseball
with
season, European trip. Yeah, I can see that.
well, maybe not, but now we're that close, I guess is what you need to know if there's any light at the end of that tunnel. But it just feels like for about a solid month the walls just kept caving in on me, and so best laid plans.
Sure.
The good news is the drawing is correct. The issues we had with this phenomenon that we never were able to explain of uploading the file. To the laser and the dimensions getting all screwed up for no apparent reason. We seem to have figured the workaround for that, although it didn't it fixes the problem after the fact, but we still don't know why it's doing what it's doing.
Right. I'm in IT. If I had a dollar for every time we fix something and I say, "Well, what did we learn?" and everybody looks at me like, "I don't know." I mean,
Yeah,
that's just kind of
exactly.
how it is.
Yeah, we fixed it, but I don't know how we fixed it or why the problem exists. We just found a way to correct it. But we've got a brick pattern that works. We have experimented with the depth and speed that the laser needs to cut at in order to get us a reasonable brick pattern that can be painted and mortared. We cut the blank walls to make sure that our dimensions were good. We ran out of wood and reordered wood and got the wood and some, it's a process. If it were, my full-time job, it would have been done a month and a half ago, but it is what it is. But for me, not only do I want to get this done, but now that I've learned to work the laser and do some relatively complicated things with it, there are other things that I want to do. So it's a little discouraging to think that at the rate I'm going, some of those things may never get done, but
Well, but the stuff that you learned, now you know.
right.
It's not like you're going to unlearn that. So when you have to do something else, you already know everything you've already learned here.
Well, and I guess what I would say is that I not that I never disrespected him or took for granted his abilities, but what Jimmy Simmons has done with the laser is not only groundbreaking but just incredibly groundbreaking.
Well, you know that Jimmy's one of those guys who gets into it with both hands and feet, so
Oh, he gets so excited, really, for someone like me who's just really fiddling around, I never would have been able to do it had I not, had an inkling of what he went through
right.
and what it was going to take. So that's that. But, maybe, just maybe, by the time we record next, I'll have a little more encouraging update for you.
Well, I'm sure there'll be no shortage of things to report on and talk about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And by then, your construction will be in full bloom. And
I'll be satisfied if I have broken ground before the next podcast.
well, if we need to, I'll show up with a shovel and a sledgehammer, and we'll break some ground.
Believe it or not, I actually looked at it at one point and thought, could I dig this with my Kubota? And then I realized it'd probably take me a month.
Yeah, it would, and you'd probably break the tractor, so.
Yeah, maybe. Well, if I hit one big rock, I'd be out of luck.
Exactly. So, folks, tune in next month, and we'll update you on all of this stuff. Thank you for listening.
We will see you soon.